Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onsite Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we have Aiden from Sorted Electrical. Aiden runs a very successful electrical company based here in Brisbane. And Aiden, I want to thank you again, mate. We've just been talking off camera a little bit, but I want to thank you again for taking the time out today. It is your first podcast, but as I said, mate, it's a pleasure to have you on. And I'm very thankful for you joining us today. So Aiden, do you want to just start off telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, how you started, what you do now, and how that sort of has rolled out and panned out, and we'll get stuck into this.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for inviting me on. Like you said, first time being on a podcast. So I pretty much started, I was at school, graduated in 2012, but I had started a electrical apprenticeship before while I was at school. So in 2012, I started school-based. I just knew I didn't really want to go to uni. I preferred the physical things at school, like sports and like woodwork, your industrial classes. I just definitely didn't want to go to uni. So I did a school-based apprenticeship through like a family friend. I enjoyed it, and then just went full-time out of school into that.
What inspired you to go down the path of electrical? Or were you dabbling in different trades at the start?
I was kind of thinking plumbing or electrical, but I got a pretty weak stomach, so
But you didn't have, what I'm saying is, there was no family friends or
I had a cousin who had his own electrical business. Probably when I was maybe grade 9 or 10 during school holidays, I did a couple of days with him just pretty much laboring. There's not much you can do when you're that young.
Grab this, do that.
I just liked the atmosphere of being on site, being out of school. It was way better than sitting in a classroom. I was never great at like the standard stuff at school. I wasn't bad. I wasn't great. It's just I had no interest in it.
That's it. Some guys like it and some guys don't.
So then, went straight into my apprenticeship out of school. Did that for 4 years. I actually got signed off about 6 months early, so 3.5 year apprenticeship. Stayed with that employer for probably 6 months. And then there was just, little issues. And then I got a job with a larger electrical company that pretty much just did house bashing for a massive builder. And I didn't mind it. Like, I learned a lot because I was thrown in the deep end, and there was a lot of procedures and a lot of things that I didn't have working for that small company.
I'm going to let you come back to that because I've actually we've spoken to a lot of electrical. Like, I've got a mate of mine as well. He does it. Like, he started out doing house bashing as well in the electrical. And I have found that people can say what they want about it, but this is what I've heard as well, is it teaches like the efficiency side of it and the speed side of it and all that sort of stuff. I've seen guys like come from that and then come from, you know, a commercial aspect. You put them in a reno, fucking the other guy's gonna run rings around old mate.
It's funny you say that, because I've had, now having my own business, I've had that exact thing happen. Tried a commercial guy when I was looking to hire. The efficiency and the speed from commercial to people who have done house bashing before, it's completely different. Guys, they just can't keep up, or they get to the end of the day and they're like, that's ridiculous. Like during the day, I'm not having to go at commercial guys. They know a lot of shit, and they're usually very technical.
It's just a different thing. It's just completely different.
But they get on site and they're like, oh, it's hot. It's like getting in roofs. Just the speed they work at, because they'll usually have 4 or 5 guys doing a job where you need realistically, you need 2 people. So whereas when you're running a really small, efficient team, there's not much leeway for someone else to pick up the slack. It's either you're getting the job done or you're not. It's funny you mentioned that. If I hire people, or I look to hire, if they've got a background or at least a year or so experience in just smashing out new builds, because it's all good. The fundamentals are exactly the same.
It's the fundamentals, and it's the same, like, for what we do, it's very similar. So we do like a lot of residential stuff still now, even in the commercial game. You want to spin it how it is, a house is a house, a raft is a raft. It doesn't matter where you fucking throw it. Same, I guess, in the commercial space. Obviously, there's different stuff, but PowerPoint's yeah. PowerPoint.
But if your boys can knock out a commercial exactly. thing at the speed they can do a residential, the
exactly. Is way so it's the you. Same. Yeah. yeah, it's the same. It's the same principle, and you learn yeah. The fundamentals doing that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, that was yeah. I went from house bashing, which exactly I learned speed,
yeah.
efficiency, like always looking for a quicker way to yeah. do things because we were paid yeah. on a. A pretty average hourly rate, but we also yep. got a bonus for if you could do like a two-person job by yourself, like if you could rough in a whole house by yourself and have everything done, you'd get like a $200-$300 bonus for the day,
yes.
which is pretty much what you're getting paid
yeah.
when you worked out your hourly rate. And then yeah. if you could do like yeah. a two-story house by yourself, you'd yeah. get an even bigger bonus. So
yeah.
it was just the first so 6 months were figuring yeah. out how the fuck are these guys, like there was only two or three guys that would be able to do the two-story homes.
Yeah.
So I was working with them, figuring out like how they did everything.
No, just guns.
And physically, you're pretty much running with your ladder, like
yeah,
to get it done. But yeah. you do that 5 days a week, and you're pretty much doubling your paycheck at the
yeah,
end of the week.
True.
So yeah, that's kind of where I learned
yeah
to work efficiently and quickly.
Yeah.
And then you'd also get the fuck ups when you went too quick, and then you'd get in shit. You have to go back and fix things in your own time. So it was a bit of a balance.
Yeah.
But
then it's a learning lesson. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
The more you do all the fuck ups, yeah. but then you learn on the next one, hey, I'm not yeah. going to do that. Might and take then, an extra 5 minutes here to save
exactly.
me fucking coming back. Yeah.
And you'd see as all the guys that had like a really strong work ethic, they're all the ones that were making the money at that. At that company, like you could have some really good technical guys that could figure out any issues, and they would get put on like the bigger projects, or they'd come through at the end.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
But that probably wasn't the company for them because they wouldn't get paid accordingly.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just the guys that were smashing the workout
yeah, yeah. yeah.
that were getting the money. So
yeah.
I kind of took that when I went into my own business. I wanted a bit of both.
Bit of both. Yeah.
I wanted to be known for doing like quality, like
yeah.
really quality work, and because we're service based, there wasn't a lot of house bashing, like we did renos, but mostly just going into mums and dads'
yeah.
homes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot easier, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a lot easier, like say for instance, you bring in a guy that's just been bashing houses, whatever, for a builder or whatever it is. When you bring him into that service game, it's almost easier to slow them down and explain to them, listen, you don't need to go a million miles a minute,
yeah.
even though you know that you can, and I like to have that. For
yeah.
ourselves, like it's good to have that as ammo nearly to be like, all right, well, if I need to, I know that he can, I'll pull the trigger and be like, all right, go. Like, but then at the same time, you just need to teach him to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the having that chat and working with them a little bit to kind of be like, yeah, you can get things done quickly, but you can also, like, there's enough time allowed in the job to slow
yeah.
down, have a chat to the customer. Because really, my whole kind of thing with my guys and working in people's homes is like any electrical business you call should be able to come out, do the job, you finish, turn the lights on, they work. Like
yeah,
there's not much difference there. The difference
yeah.
that people remember and get you back is like you have a chat to them,
yeah.
you like build a connection with them, you take that bit of extra time to get
yeah.
to know them, and then when you leave, they're like, oh sweet, the electrical work,
yeah.
like it all works, everything's good. But
yeah.
they took the time to have a chat.
Exactly.
And we remember
yeah.
the guy's name, he remembered our name,
yeah.
like he asked how we're going, if we came back. So
yeah.
all those little things, I think that's what helps build like a really good
rapport
return,
and stuff. Yeah.
yeah, return customers
yeah.
and having that, yeah, well, you don't need to advertise as much or because you're getting so much return work.
Yeah.
And it just kind of puts you apart from a lot of these like really big companies where
yeah.
they're just in and out and yeah, there's no like connection with the customer or anything like that.
Yeah, that's
so.
It. Yeah, I'm a fucking strong preacher on that. Like, literally, that example is the same. A tap's a tap. A PowerPoint's a PowerPoint. You know, at the end of the day, it's all the same shit. You know, will one product be a little bit better than the others? Maybe. But as a customer, they're not really interested in that. As long as they're getting the bang for their buck and they're enjoying the experience and they're
yeah,
happy,
exactly.
that's it. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
They don't care about, you know, if you're... you know, you're flat, you're better than this, you're better than that, or whatever. They don't really care about any of that at the end of the day. They just want a good experience and a good product. And like, I revert back to even the social media aspect. Like, that's a massive thing as well. Like, I always go down the fact of like, if you've got 10 people in a room, let's just say 10 people they can all say to you, yep, for $500 I can install a PowerPoint for you. If you got one person there, who are they going to select out of the 10? 9 times out of 10, they're going to select the person that they either know or have heard of.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's just me putting myself in the customer's brain. It's like you need to be able to get yourself known for something or somehow.
Yeah. And then, just have some of that social proof behind you. Yeah, reviews,
exactly. Like, just something. Yeah. Because if you can get that out there, that's really how you're going to make the, you know, and these big boys that play these big games, unfortunately, yes, they've got the, obviously, as you said, they don't provide the service as much, but unfortunately they're obviously, you know, with advertising and all this other shit that goes on.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there is room in there for the little guys like ourselves that can break through. So, yeah, that's good. So, talk to me. So, when you were doing, so how long was the transition? Did you become qualified doing house bashing, and then you just decided then just to jump straight into sorted electrical, or what was the, did you just subby back to them for a bit or?
No, so with electrical, they've changed it now. It used to be 12 months. So, you'd finish your apprenticeship, you'd have to do 12 months as a qualified electrician before you could get your contractor's license, which allowed you to start your own business. So, I did that 12 months. As soon as I hit the 12 months, did my contractor's course.
Yeah.
And then I probably stayed another 6 or 7 months at the house bashing company.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, I definitely want to start my own business. Like, this is what I want to do. And then just started, took a huge pay cut, like just next to nothing.
Yeah.
I was lucky. I was renting with someone like super cheap rent.
Yeah.
Didn't have like misses. No, I don't have kids still, but I had I had no real responsibility. So I could take
yourself,
that jump and go, if it doesn't work, like I'm just going to be, I can get a job anywhere, anytime.
Exactly.
So yeah, I did that. And for the first year I was like, oh, this isn't too bad. I was living out at Ipswich at the time.
Yeah.
And I just kind of found, I didn't really know what I was doing with pricing, all that kind of stuff. So I'd really take stuff personally when someone would be like, oh, I'm not, like that's too expensive. So I'd be like, well, if someone else can do it cheaper, there's no reason why I can't do it at that same price and make money. So I was always in this circle of getting shitty customers because I'd be giving them like cheap prices, and then they'd tell their mates who are also tight asses. And it wasn't
I'm going to cut you off because this is getting good. This is getting good because this is the shit that no one talks about, because this is the same fucking journey that I went on, and everyone loves, you guys that are listening, it's the same thing. Everyone loves to say, how do you start out? This is it.
Yeah.
You guys are listening to it right now. This is it. This is how you fucking do it. This is not the pretty side. This is how it's done. You get the shit. So continue. Let me guess. First. Yeah. So you did. Everyone told you, oh, this guy can do it for a cheaper rate. So you got busy on a cheap rate.
You get busy. You're super busy. You can't grow your business. You can't do anything other than work. You get to the end of the week. You're like, fuck, that was a huge week. Awesome.
Yeah.
You sit down with your accountant. I don't know how often you guys are sitting down with your accountant, but if you have a good one, they should pull you up pretty quick and be like, mate, what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, some
but
guys
yeah, you'd
at
get
the
to
point
the end, you'd get to the end and then they'll be like, you can go work for someone, make more money and be half as busy.
Yeah.
So I kind of was at this stage, I'm like, I need to kind of figure out what I'm doing, where I'm going wrong. So one thing I'd really recommend to people starting is get a business coach.
Yeah.
Like maybe don't just get the first one that hits you up. Do some research. Try and find someone
in your
industry or that has done actually grown a business.
Yeah.
Because there's so many guys that start coaching businesses and they've never actually run a business, let alone a trade business.
Isn't there a thousand coaches out there now? Yeah.
So I went with a guy who started an electrical business, scaled it massively, moved interstate, still ran his business from interstate, didn't need to be there. Super successful. And just in, I reckon, even if you don't stick to it long term, just if you could do 6 to 12 months and get all the foundation, get your pricing, get some spreadsheets to work out your numbers, it made a huge difference.
So, how long were you doing? Like, how long were you busy? Like, you just constantly just busy still at this point?
I reckon 12 months, I was just like,
just running around
busy. And then I was like, I can't even pay myself what I was making.
Just pricing jobs, just getting a job, on the phone, text message, whatever it is. Yeah, as it come, you would just do it, cash, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say no to pretty much any job.
Anything, yeah.
And if I'd put my price in thinking that it was competitive, and then I get a call, our old mate said he can do it cheaper. Especially when you first start, you feel bad. You're like, fuck, am I ripping someone off or am I like too expensive? If another like legit business that's, they could have been around 2, 3, 5 years can do it cheaper, how am I more expensive?
And everyone loves to go, how do you price?
Yeah.
How do you
price? And a lot of times you won't even question them on it. People say, I got a cheaper price. You won't be like, where from, or can I see if we're quoting the same thing?
Yeah.
You just like take their word for it. And now later on, I realize so many people just make shit up or say that they've got cheaper pricing, or they're like, oh, we got a cheaper price. They can't fit it in for 12 months. It's like, you can't compare that. So
yeah,
I started doing business coaching, got a really good spreadsheet worked out, and realized that because we do service work, well, I was doing service work more than like house bashing or commercial or anything like that, I was realizing I'm only getting like 5 billable hours in a day, not 8. And normally when you're working out your pricing, you're working off 8 hours of billable time to cover all your overhead. So I had to redo all my pricing, change from, I don't do hourly at all. Everything's fixed per point or per item pricing, which is obviously based off a rate that I know I have to work off.
Yeah.
And as your business changes, that obviously has to change as well. So you always need to be looking at it. But yeah, that made a huge difference. So that second year, I put on my youngest brother, who was a second year apprentice. And he was pretty much driving around while I was in the car quoting, calling
but
jobs.
But then how was that transition? So, because I know personally we're missing a point here. So let's just say you were working for 4 or 5 guys at whatever rate it was. How did that transition go with you then saying to them, all right, I can no longer do... Example, can I no longer do that PowerPoint for 100? My price now is 180 or 200.
Well, I lost.
Did you, you go, you lose guys.
I just lost. I lost a lot of those return customers. So I would have done the work. They'll call me up to do maybe extra work, and they'll be like, "Oh, your price has doubled since last time." I'm like, my business has changed. I've worked out pricing, blah blah blah. And then they don't use you.
And
then
it's almost a tough pill.
And then you're slowly
the time,
swapping. Yeah. You might be like losing 2 customers but gaining 1 at your new pricing, and then you realize that 1 customer is covering, like you're making more off doing 1 job than you are like working for that shittier rate. And then you just, your whole business starts getting a new clientele or new customers that are willing to pay for the service that you provide. And I found not the more expensive, but when you're at that price point of you're getting clients that just want the job done well and the price is just like a side.
Yeah.
They're obviously, they just want the job done well. They want you to turn up when you say you're going to turn up, answer your phone.
Be reliable.
And then the price isn't like the main thing. Like so many people would call you and be like, how much is this? And then as soon as you give them the price, they're like, yep, sweet, hang up.
Yeah, because they know you're going to rock up and do the job.
Whereas, when you get a good customer, they're like, they pretty much want to know how much it is, when you can do it. And then if they're happy, they just straight away book you in.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was slowly transitioning out of those shitty customers, and getting some better quality customers.
It's
over.
The same.
It was a long process, probably six months, and that's probably when I started seeing a little bit of profit, or I was like, oh, I can actually pay myself a proper wage, like a normal wage that I'd be making somewhere else, and then the business as a separate entity is kind of
Got you a never. Bit left over. This is literally the pathway that we're like we've been on that same path.
Yeah.
Like the highs and the lows go further extreme as you go on each level. Your price goes up, your expenses go up, you make less, like et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on and on. Like everyone thinks that you make a shit ton of money. Like there is eventually a glass ceiling that you hit in regards of pricing. Like it doesn't matter if it's if someone's pricing $200 for an item. You can be the best, you can give them the best service in the world, the best brand, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Good luck trying to charge them $2,000 for it.
Because they end up on a current affair.
It's just not going to happen. So as you go up and up and up and you eventually hit that ceiling where you are charging at that market value rate, you're comfortable with your rate, then comes the next challenge of mitigating your price, like trying to make more money within the money that you're charging
at the same price.
At the same price, all your little efficiencies. And that's probably the same. We're constantly doing it. You're trying to be more efficient. Doesn't mean that your quality dips or anything like that. You're still trying to keep that high, And these are all the dramas that everyone,
So that was kind of the next thing was once I hired my brother, I found I'm like, oh, we're getting through way more jobs because. Like I've obviously got to allow for another person on site or another wage, but it was still covered in the same price that I was charging for just myself because we're getting through a lot more.
What year is he now?
He finished, so he's a qualified tradie now. But he worked for me probably like 6 months to 12 months as a tradie, and then he got a job fly in, fly out in a coal mine. So he's like, this is what I can make. I can't pay you that as a first year of your trade.
We're not even competing. Good luck.
Yeah. who knows what'll happen down the track, but he moved on. But by then I had another tradie and another apprentice.
Yeah.
And now yeah, now I've got three tradies and three apprentices, which I find is like a really good size, efficient team. And I'm pretty much able to just be in the office full time.
Yeah.
Quoting and I do a few runaround things, but
yeah.
But yeah, back to slowly changing the business and pricing. That was massive, a massive challenge.
Mm.
And you realize you have to get to a certain point of like, if you have a couple more tradies, you're way more profitable at that price than if it's just you, like getting around as well. So
yeah. All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode. Yeah, I found that like there is a bit of a tipping point. So, you know, efficiency, when I eventually back like fully off the tools and, you know, we run teams and that now. But right at the start, like when we were first starting out, because everyone's like, oh, I want to get off the tools. My goal was never to be off the tools. Everyone loves to say they see and they're like, oh, this guy just want to get off the tools. I was very transparent with the guys that I had. I never wanted to get off the tools. That was never my goal. My goal was always to just grow the business and grow the business and to be a company that people wanted to work for.
Yeah.
And it was a good place to work. And in order to do that, we come to the realization that I had to. So it was a natural transition. I had to go, you know, 2 days a week off, 3 days a week off. And that fucking, and, you know, productivity dipped on site a little bit.
Yeah.
Then you have the challenge of, you know, then you got to cover that your wage is now an overhead. It's not billable. So it's now overhead and then adjusting your numbers. And it's a fucking constant thing. Like you're constantly just changing. And then you bring other people in, support, admin, estimators, all these other stuff dips in there. So,
and all these, and a lot of people don't realize that either. Like what you just said about when you slowly come off the tools, even if you're taking 1 day a week off the tools, you've got to show that in your price. Yeah. You've got to make that up somewhere. You can't just take the same wage you're paying yourself while you're billing yourself out and come off and then just expect the numbers to be exactly the same.
Yeah. Because the productivity will dip. Like when the boss is there, stuff usually happens a lot faster. People are a lot more in tuned. So as soon as I came away, I couldn't expect my guys to get 100 things done a day. Maybe it was 70 things done. So that was something that I had to learn. Obviously, it gets the next hurdle then, like for us, was then our productivity did then increase past from when I was on site. But that was just from building out culture, building out team leaders and all this sort of stuff. Like it does improve over time, but it's a fucking battle, So, all right. So fast forwarding now, we've missed a lot of, you know, I feel like that was a really good segment about the journey from when you're an apprentice, starting out with the pricing and stuff like that. But talk to us about some of the challenges you've had in regards to hiring staff. I know that the first one was your brother and that was probably fantastic. But have you had any issues in regards to shortage of staff or anything like that? You know, have you got any other apprentices that you've got with you? Are you thinking about bringing on other apprentices and how's your experience been in regards to that? Or has it been fucking smooth sailing? Every person that you've hired has been fantastic.
No, not exactly. Yeah. I feel like the last couple of years have been really employees kind of holding a lot of the power. So obviously, I think in the last 2 years...
Are you finding the shift changing? Because this is coming out. This will probably be out in March or something like that. But yeah, have you...
Yeah, slowly... I don't know. I know that hiring was super difficult. Like you'd be on Seek,
everything,
reaching out to all these different players. You had companies offering like, fucking, I saw someone offering like 2 jet skis or a jet ski as a sign on bonus. Like fuck, just ridiculous stuff that you just never imagine.
He's giving his boat.
Yeah. And then I did contact a couple of recruiters when I was like desperate for a trade and they wanted like 10 to 15
Isn't
grand.
That fucked as well? I went down the path of to recruiters and I was like...
They're something like 10% of their salary plus a fixed amount. And they're like, if they leave after 6 months, they're like, well, too bad.
Too bad.
It's ridiculous.
No guarantees.
And you don't know who you're getting. Like, you'd say I need a residential guy with this and this. And then they'll be like, oh, we got this awesome commercial guy. Like they're not really helping that much.
Yeah.
There's a few good recruiters, but... Luckily for me, the first tradie I hired, I knew previously from where I used to work.
Yeah.
Wanted to change. He was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just hired an apprentice through someone I knew that I did my TAFE with. So he knew someone. He's like, oh, hey, my mate's looking for a mature age apprenticeship. And he's been really good. So that was another pretty easy hire.
Yeah.
But then that guy, the first tradie I hired, got offered a job with one of his mates. Again, like promised a lot of stuff.
Mm.
And then he gave me a huge amount of notice, like 6 months pretty much.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, I'm going to be back down to like almost like no tradies. This was just after my brother left as well. So yeah. I'm like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And just frantically looking, contacting recruiters on Seek, and just had like rubbish, like just overseas people, no licenses, like just laborers. And then I was, really lucky. Someone reached out through Seek, gave an interview, turned out to be like really good tradie.
Yeah.
Put him on, and then, got another guy shortly after that. So it's just luck. I think a lot of it was luck with hiring.
Yeah.
But I think it was really difficult to get good staff.
Yeah.
And it's difficult at the moment.
Yeah. We know a lot of guys, like obviously all business owners and that, and it is definitely, now I feel like the tables are turned. It's becoming, and it will be more as interest rates drop and all this sort of stuff happens, the tables will shift. It will definitely become an employer market.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's definitely, even before, it was an employee market. Fucking trying to get guys was...
Oh, well, I think wages would have gone up 20-30% in an industry in 12 to 18 months, which is fair. Like the cost of living and everything's gone up. I don't know how people are surviving on, $900 a week or whatever.
You have
whatever
to. I literally have this battle with, a lot of the apprentices that we got. Like, I pay what the government stipulates to pay. Yeah. If I was in a position that I could pay everyone $4,000 a week, I would.
Yeah.
Fuck me. I'd like $4,000 a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we're just not. And it's a common thing. Prime example, we're dealing with builders and developers and stuff like that. These guys have got projects in the works from 18 months ago. So the common thing that I get is, oh, mate, here's our rates. Here's what our allowances are. But we priced it 18 months ago. So I'm like, okay, is that my problem or is that your problem?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not a dick. I want to work in with them and I don't want to see them burn out either. But at the same time, I'm not going to go bankrupt because of their mispricing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is a common thing that I'm literally trying to manipulate the market in Brizzy with a lot of these multi-res guys and builders and just developers and stuff. And I'm trying to tell them, listen, you guys need to be, pricing now. Like the stuff that we're pricing now.
You got to be considering this. You're not starting it for
We got to consider a 20% price from now to September.
Yep.
And that's facts. Oh, we can't expect to do that. Well, then don't build it.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen is you're going to get to September and they're not going to be able to afford it. And they're going to be going through the same battle and I'm not going to be there.
Yeah.
Because if my wages that my guys are getting higher again, our prices have to be higher again and we're going to be way too far apart. Yeah. So unfortunately, it all trickles from the top. Like it is literally a battle from the top. And
I guess that comes down through all the trades. Like you're the developers and stuff you're working for be close to the top. And then if they're having that issue, that just gets passed all the way down. Like we're trying to put in pricing or tenders for jobs thinking like, oh, well, we can't be up here because everyone else is going to be here. And then no one's making money at the end of the day.
Exactly. Like, no one's making money. So it literally takes us, it takes everyone to push the price, to push it up. Like, and what damages the industry, I feel at the moment, is the guys that are taking that. Don't get me wrong. There's guys out there that can do it that are super lean. Prime example, I've pushed on to a crew. I know guys that can do stuff at those rates, and I push it to them, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I know deep down they're not making money, or I know deep down they're paying their
percentages are tight.
They're paying their guys. They're paying their guys not even the award rate. Like some of these guys that are operating in that structure. But hey, to the builders and developers, they don't give a fuck.
Mm.
As long as the job's getting done, it doesn't bother them. As long as they're making their margin, it doesn't bother them. So, but for us, it's just like, it's changing that mindset and just trying to push the rate up. Because it is a constant thing. And like going back, like I'm just trying to get a bit of context for the guys that are listening, but going back to the employment side of it, about it being an employee market, is that everyone was out there saying, I want, I had a guy ring me one day and he was like, I want $70 an hour on wages. I went, okay, $70 an hour works out to be about $135,000 a year or something. Something fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I was like, never met him, don't know what he's like, apparently he's got tools. I don't fucking know. But he's like, that's what I need. I was like, okay. I said, not for me. I said, the only place that you'll probably get that is the mines. It's going out there and working for Santos or, you know.
And you won't, you're probably not going to get that rate. You're going to get the, you'll get that yearly amount, but you'll be doing 60, 70 hours a week.
Yeah. And that's another thing that I love as well is this yearly amount. Everyone loves to throw out the yearly, you know. I want 110 grand a year. Okay. Yeah. You know, run your numbers back on 55 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the normal statistic of most people that are on salary. If you look at the statistic, most people that are on salary are doing it about 50 hours, 55 hours a week. So you run your numbers back on that, you're on a lot less than what you're actually.
Chuck a trader who's getting overtime after 40 hours on 55 hours a week.
Yeah, exactly.
170 grand a year.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I like to say to my guys, like these, my guys are on, they're on good money. Like they're, if they're doing 50 hours a week on their, what they're getting paid, like they're on good money. You run your numbers back to your salary, that's a good salary.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I've had, I literally had it the other day. There was a guy in here and he was going, oh, you know, I want 100 grand a year. I said, all right, 100 grand a year, you know, you do 55 hours a week. There's your rate. We did the calculator because I got the labor calculator. Once you push everything out. And he was like, oh, I can't be working for that. I was like, well.
You want 100 grand a year.
Yeah. So, but I definitely do feel now that the tables are definitely turning because how I know is we run Constant Seek and Indeed ads. So I can constantly see the applicants, ups and downs. Yeah. I can constantly see. You see literally the waves each month. You can see more applicants, less, more, less, more, less. And you
so
can
you
see
do that even if you're not actively looking to hire?
We're always actively looking. We're in the mindset that we are always looking to hire the right applicant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if the right one comes, I'm down. I'll never say no, you know, but I'm always going to look for the right one. So that's why we run our ads consistently and we're always looking to hire. So, yeah, like definitely now we're seeing a lot more people, you know, coming in and quality ones too. That's the key thing for me is the higher the quality, the better I know. Because I know that if David is like one of my, like he's like say this guy sending in a resume and I know that he's like, oh yeah, he'd be definitely someone that I look for. If I've got more of him coming in, I know that something's going on. So, yeah, so that's just been my little journey.
Yeah, I agree. So, I think I get a lot of calls. I've noticed probably in the last 6 months, maybe the amount of apprentices calling, like people wanting apprenticeships or people not happy where they are or they want to change.
Yeah.
I've noticed that a lot more as well.
Yeah.
I haven't been looking for tradies at the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've noticed definitely apprentices. Like there's always people looking for apprenticeships in the last 6 months, like 3-4 calls a week minimum.
Yeah, man. I think as I touched off camera before, apprentices in general, they're probably like my... You know, I like that whole space.
Yeah.
I mean, I put a lot of time and energy into our apprentices and stuff. And, you know, I want the best for them because I know the difficulty that they go through. But at the same time, there are guys out there that are uneducated. And as I was trying to touch on before, it's like up to us to educate these guys and not tell them not to do a trade, but just be very aware of what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah.
You know, and I sit down with them at the start during the interview process and I tell them how it is. If you're in it for the... If you're in it to make a shit ton of money, this isn't it. Doesn't matter if you're in electrical, you're in plumbing or anything like that. When you're in an apprenticeship, it's a grind. No matter which way you spin it. You're not going to make a shit ton of money during an apprenticeship. If you want to do that, you're best off working in retail or real estate.
Doing something where you're getting a set, like you're getting commission or you're getting paid on a sales.
Go do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because having an apprenticeship, no matter which apprenticeship it is, you're not going to make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
All right? So, and the other thing as well is you... It's a double-edged sword. You're not going to make a lot of money. Your body's going to be sore. You're going to be doing a lot of hours. You're going to think that you're going nowhere. And you're going to be seeing a lot of fucking shit on TikTok about people signing up to your course, make 10 grand a day. Johnny at the barbecues earning $60 an hour, packing shelves in Woolies.
Old mate driving around his Lambo. Just do this. Just
do this. Do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Don't be working. Don't be a slave.
Yeah.
That's all the shit that these guys have got to put up with. And that to me, like that's why I'm such an advocate for them is because... As I sit down with all my apprentices, I say the same thing. The physicality, the finances, all that sort of shit, that's not the hard part. The hard part is the mental. It's that is the hardest part because even though I've had guys literally sitting here with the biggest mindset, the biggest dream, they want to do, they build the biggest company, they want to make a shit ton of money, they want to be in the trade.
Yep.
I say to them, okay, let's take it month by month. all right? Because I sit down with my guys every 3 months and we do a revision. We take it month by month. And I can literally see as the months progress that that little spark dips. Mm. Because, it, you know, even though they say it doesn't affect them, all it takes is a couple of guys sitting at, you know, they're going to go hang out with their mates and go to the shops, or they go out one night, or they're having a drink with someone that they don't know, and they just drop a little bit of how much money they're getting, or they're doing this and that.
Yeah.
Even though they do not fucking mention it, they think it doesn't affect them. It's the days when they're in the ute driving home after a fucking 10 or 11 hour day, sweating their ass out in a roof or whatever, and they're sitting in their car. That is then when they're in traffic, that's that little voice in the head saying, oh,
you know, what am I doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what am I doing? This guy's earning this. He's not even doing what I'm doing, and he's earning a shit ton more than me. That is the fucking, the little thing that eats away. And that to me is what is ruining the fucking, the industry, the trades. Because we've got a massive fucking shortage of tradies.
Well, it's like one in three or one in four people actually in electrical will finish their apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Like when I first started at TAFE, the teacher was like, by the time we get to the fourth year, like, there'll be maybe like, one in four of you guys will be here.
Yeah.
It's like they'll all be new people. Yeah. Like the dropout rate is insane.
It's insane.
Because they get to the first year, they're like, oh yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
Like blah, blah, blah. Second year, they're like, oh fuck, still shit money.
Yeah.
My mates at Woolies packing boxes, making double what I'm making.
Yeah.
But if you, it is a double-edged sword though. If you make it through and you've got that work ethic, there's money to be made as a qualified. And I think it is also who you're working with as well. Like I know just even from my business, some apprentices, if you're there with they're with a tradie and they're like they don't enjoy it, or they've just got different personalities, like that can make their days fucking so long. So one of the things I really want to work on probably in the new year is just working out people's personalities and who they work with and who they get along with, because I think that makes a huge difference as well.
If you're
getting paid shit, you don't like the person you're working with and you're doing big hours, like there's only so much you can take of that. So
man, it's like the mindset around it. And like as I said, I put a lot of time and energy into the guys that we've got, and I say to them all, like, it's the mindset that they need to build. Because I've got a couple of guys that like really want to start their own thing. They really want to go out there and make millions, whatever, I don't care, right? I'll help them.
Yeah.
But the apprenticeship, and as I've said to him, your apprenticeship, believe it or not, but that is as easy as it gets. If you think it gets any easier, it doesn't, right? You might think, and I literally had this conversation with an apprentice that was talking about money. I said, all right. He's like, I need more money. I'm like, all right. If I give you $1,000 a week, would that help? Yeah, it would. Yeah, it'd be fucking fantastic. I was like, all right. So how good are you managing the money that you currently have? Oh, I don't never have enough. I said, so why do you think it would make it any different if you add more money? Because guess what happens when you get more money? You have a girlfriend, you have kids, you have a mortgage,
you find a spot you
have
to bills. Spend it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It literally goes. I said, you think it's any different with me? All right? Business, more people. Doesn't mean that I'm sitting on the couch just fucking making a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Work out ways to spend it. More kids, more house. Yeah. Fucking more employees, more overheads, et cetera, et cetera. The bills just get more. So as I literally preach them all the time, if you cannot manage the money that you got, you're not going to be able to manage it with $2,000 a week, $3,000 a week. The fucking principle doesn't change.
Yeah.
All right. So that's what I usually just preach to them, is like about the money and you know, that fucking struggle that they constantly have around the mindset of it all. And, you know, I just say to them, like, believe it or not, but the apprenticeship is the favorite part. And you guys take it for granted. The guys that are apprentices that are working with other apprentices, that I was an apprentice and I didn't work with no fucking apprentices. There was no other apprentice. It was just me, myself, and I. And I was the guy that got the kettle, got the toaster, got the chairs, fucking swept up, like everything, got the tools. Back when there was another apprentice, I used to be like, oh, this is sick. I'm like sharing the load.
Yeah.
And you used to be able to feed off another apprentice and like get that, you know, morale going.
Yeah, you're both in the fucking trenches.
Or you used to be having like a bit of a competition, and that used to be fun as well.
Yeah.
So,
and it's hard to be that guy as well who's all like, oh, back when I was an apprentice. Like, it wasn't that long. Like, really, it wasn't that.
Yeah.
2012.
Exactly.
It is a long time ago, but it's not that far.
And it's not that long.
Back when I was a first year apprentice, I was making like fucking $7 an hour.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. I had to pay my own fuel. Had to do all this stuff. Like, I'd get to the end of the week and have like $60 left.
But it's all context.
It just doesn't doesn't translate when you try and explain it. And it's always just like, oh, you're. Yeah, it's like when older people say, oh, well, you should have bought a house, my interest rates were this. Like, it feels like that's the same conversation.
Oh, you know, it's the same. That's what it feels like. But that's why I try to say to them, it really, like, you can sit here and talk about your war stories and that. But as I sort of say to them, like, it doesn't change. It literally doesn't change. Back when I was in prison, I used to think, I was on fucking shit money. You know, I used to complain
about.
And
then you talk to your parents, and they're like, "Fucking, I made $10 a week."
Exactly, it's all fucking the same stuff. Yep. So, but it all comes down to the mindset of it. If you got the balls to finish the apprenticeship and stick it through, and this is something that I preach a lot, is there is such a shortage. Doesn't matter, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, whatever fucking trade you're in, it doesn't matter. In 10, 15 years' time, there is going to be such a fucking shortage of tradies because I just know that there is not enough apprentices coming through. Let alone finishing their trade, right? It's got nothing to do with the employees. It's just the current stats of what it is. There is literally not enough guys actually becoming qualified. That means that there's going to come a fucking crossroad.
Yeah.
There's still houses that need to be built. There's still people that want renos and that, and there's not enough guys. So what happens then? Supply and demand. Whoever's
pricing will just go.
Exactly. Whoever's paying the most is going there.
Yeah. And they're going to make good money. Like, if you're still in the industry at that time,
you're going to make a shit ton of money.
You can say what you want, pretty much.
I read a study the other day that was like, well, not a study. It was like some sort of fucking reference thing about the projection of wages. They reckon that in 2035 or 2045 or something, a tradie, regardless of the industry, is going to be minimum 200 grand a year. Minimum. Yeah. Like, that is ridiculous. Like, they're going to be making more than surgeons and anything like that. Because what's going to happen is all these... and. All these houses that need to get built and all these developers and that, whoever's paying the highest amount of money, they're going to get the people. Yeah. That's the facts. Doesn't matter about anything else. Like, you know, you can have the best culture and yes, you're going to retain staff. We're going to retain who we can with the best
culture. But getting
them in the door.
They want to know what they're getting, how much you make.
Price is constantly just going to have to go up and go up. And I feel sorry for the end consumer, the end customer, the people buying the units or the houses or the people that are getting the renos, because unfortunately, it is going to be one of those things where if Joanne and Dave and fucking Leanne, they've both got the same reno, one wants to pay $850, one wants to pay $500. Who the fuck do you think's getting their reno done?
Exactly.
The person paying $850.
Yeah.
You know? Doesn't matter if she gives you T's and scones. It's not worth $300,000. Yeah. So you're going to go to the person that's paying the most, and that is what's going to happen. I guarantee it. Yeah. So, you know, stay in the trade. You guys that are in it, that have started it, and you think it's tough, fucking promise you, stay in it. Mark my words.
Yeah. And that Listen 4 years is only, it only goes slow because you're, as an apprentice, you're doing like a lot of the shitty jobs, a lot of the runaround stuff. Like the first 2 years go pretty slow, and then you're like, oh fuck, I'm already in my third year.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you get signed off early. It's not even a full 4 years. Like you might only do 3.5 years. Well, and then once you're a tradie, I reckon the years between like when I first started my business and now have fucking flown. I'm like, holy shit. Like where's the last 8 years gone?
Yeah.
Like I had my 10-year graduation in 2022 and I was like, holy fuck, 10 years.
Yeah.
Been out of school, like that time just like it flies. So yeah, that first 4 years you're like, oh, it's so slow. You catch up with family, how's your apprenticeship? Oh, I'm only in my second year. Well, then before you know it, you're like, fuck, 4 years into your trade or three years into your trade.
And my biggest thing now is like, I got apprentices that have done their first 2 years and now they're in their third and fourth year, and I'm telling them, I'm like, listen, you guys are nearly at the door to be qualified.
Yeah.
And this is another issue that I find is that they're knocking on the door to be qualified now. Like they need to actually fucking start understanding what they're doing. They're no longer the person sweeping floors.
Yeah, start learning. You learn now in the last 2 years.
They need to learn.
Same as, magically just switch to trading.
They need to learn. Yeah. And like I say to them, because they're like, oh, I want to get my certificate. That's the thing, right? A lot of them, they say, I just want to get my Cert 3. I want to get my certificate. I want to get qualified. All right, done. So guess what happens when you become qualified? You're in the same fucking pool as this guy and this guy and this guy. These other guys that I got qualified, you're in the same basket as them. So let me just reiterate to you. If I lined you guys up, who am I picking as an employer? Who am I going to pick to get? Because you're all qualified now.
Yeah.
Who am I going to get? Fuck, I'm not getting you. You don't know anything. You got your qualification, and guess what happens then? You go from job to job to job to job, claiming that you're qualified, but you're not keeping your job because you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
So it is up to them to learn. So you guys that are on your third, fourth, year and you're getting there, you guys need to fucking knuckle down. Learn what you can, because once you get that certificate, there's no comebacks. There's not, you're not going to get your qualification and be like, oh no, but I still don't know. Like,
yeah, you're not going to go and get the responsibility with the certificate.
You're not going to go up to Aiden, for instance. If you're just become qualified as an electrician, you go up to Aiden and you go, oh, listen, I'm qualified. I want qualification rates, but I don't know how to do that or this and that. He'd then turn around to you and be like, mate, you're qualified. Why the fuck would I get you at that rate when I can get this guy that knows it all? You know what I mean? And there's no comebacks. And it's not like he can then go, as an employer, you can't then pay someone that's qualified as an apprentice rate and say to him, oh, it's all good, man. You just stay with me. It doesn't work like that.
No.
So you get where I'm going? Yeah. Like it is.
Yeah. You're competing against everyone else with that same certificate who can do
exactly
or has however many years of experience.
And it was the same. Got, like I literally remember the conversation when I was coming in towards the end. That was how they spun it to me. And that literally kicked me in the ass. They spun it to me exactly like that. They said, listen, you get that piece of paper, it's going to seem like it's the best day of your life. You're going to enjoy it. But guess what? All these other boys that you're all working with, they're all your competition.
Or a month later, you're on a job and you're like, it's your job.
Exactly.
You're not the apprentice going, oh, the tradie will sort it out.
Oh.
Or if there's a fuck up, it's like, oh, the tradie running the job is responsible. It's like, now you're the tradie.
Exactly.
Like, this is your job.
One of the qualified guys, I remember I was just doing, I was doing a box guarder or something. There was some fucking thing I was framing out. I was just qualified, just become qualified. And I remember I was supposed to be doing it or something. Mind you, I was getting paid as a qualified. And I come down. The jobs all got handed out in the morning. I said to him, oh, I don't know how to do that. The guy literally turned to me, ripped me. He goes, mate, if you don't know how to do it, fucking find out. It's your job to do today. I'm not holding your hand. You got to watch a YouTube video, find out, and don't fuck it up. Yeah. And I was like, I've never done it before. Can't you show me? He goes, showing is for apprentices, not for qualifieds.
Yeah.
You should have learnt that. You've done them before? And I literally, from that day forward, I was YouTubing, I was reading books, and like for that 12 months, I was literally, yes, I was qualified, but I worked even harder than.
I reckon you learn more in that 12 months of being a tradie.
Exactly. That little statement.
Especially if they don't give you the opportunity. Like that's why the third and fourth year is like you're a lot of the time, like my third year apprentice now, when he's with the tradie, it's almost like the tradie is your apprentice. You do the job, you do the switchboard, you do this,
everything.
You do that. And the tradie I've got now is really good with the apprentice at the moment. Like you do the fucking job as if you're the tradie and I'll just make sure like at the end everything's sweet. But then when they do go out by themselves, they're like, oh, I've done this before, or like I feel comfortable. Because the biggest thing's confidence as well.
Yeah.
Like if you're always getting told what to do, where to go, like how to do this, you're never going to be like, oh, now I've got to make the decision myself.
Yeah. Yeah. What I'm trying to say for you guys that are listening that are apprentices is don't rush the process. Don't think that, I need to rush. Because the amount of guys that I get in here, I want to get my apprenticeship done straight away. I want to get it done straight away. I'm like, okay. Like, you can get it done as fast as you want.
How quick a learner are you?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, how quick are you going to actually learn?
Yeah.
You know? So, but that's my little fucking spiel about the apprentices.
Yeah, heaps of people do that. They just cruise through their apprenticeships. I'm lucky with my guys, but I saw it when I was an apprentice. Cruise through, do the bare minimum, don't ask questions, just try and avoid any issues where they might get in trouble or not want to ask questions. And then they get to the end of the apprenticeship and they're like, they may as well still be a second year apprentice because they can't do anything that they need to be doing. So.
Yeah.
It's you're not helping yourself by not asking questions. Like
even
now as a employer, I'll get annoyed. Sometimes the apprentice asks me like fucking all these questions and you got to take a step back and be like, it's a good thing he's asking questions.
Yeah.
Even if they're annoying or like you don't have the time, at least like make a note of it and kind of explain when you can. Because that's the difference between a good apprentice and then someone who'll get to the end and not know.
And I feel like we're asking the right question.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. People get this skewed. We've had apprentices in the past being like, oh, but you want us to ask questions. Yeah. Like, okay. Now I've learned the art of being like, it's asking the right question, right?
Yeah.
It's not asking the wrong question. There's no wrong... Everyone likes to say, there's no such thing as the wrong question or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, until you're the one sitting there getting 15 of them every day.
There is, you know what I mean? If you're a third year and you're asking, hey, how do I subtract? Like a simple question.
Yeah.
That's a fucking wrong question. You should know that. So that's all I can say is there is no wrong question, but it's contextual to the year that you're in or what you should know with the employee that you have. So, keep chugging along. All right. Fuck me. The time has gone super quick on this one. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of this one. So I feel like we've missed a lot. There's a lot to your journey that we haven't touched on. But I feel like this has been a really good chat. I feel like we've brought a lot of value to you guys that are listening. So here we go. Talk to us about the remaining of your journey, like where you're at the moment, what's your transition now, where you're at, how is that going? Do you see your team getting bigger? Because you said you're in the service game at the moment.
Yeah.
Are you looking to step into other avenues or like what's your...
At the moment, I've got a project with a builder we work for. We're going 50-50 in a development.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get to a stage where we do that maybe one or two a year.
Yeah.
And have a team working on like our own kind of like split blocks or lift and build unders and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'd love to kind of do that on the side as well as run the electrical business.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to get my business to a point where maybe at least 2-3 days a week I can have someone running it, doing the scheduling, doing the quoting, so I can actually have a holiday. Like the only time I have off at Christmas is when we shut for two to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Last year I went to Fiji for a week, and the whole time I was like, I did have someone taking the phone calls and I had the week already booked out, but I still just couldn't enjoy myself because I'm sitting there like, fuck, no one's like, who is running the business like properly?
Yeah.
So I'd love to get to a stage where I have the confidence or I have someone that could be like, yep, sweet, for the next 2 weeks, I'm all good. Like we won't miss out on work. We'll keep booking ahead.
Yeah.
And it just makes your business like,
Automated, not that I
want to sell my business, but I'd love to have something that's almost like a standalone, like a company that just runs, like has all the employees.
What's the saying? A business isn't a business until it can run itself.
Yeah, exactly. Like so, it's pretty much a job until you can walk away from it.
Like same as me. I'm still an employee. I'm just an employee to my business. Yeah. I play a role just like anyone else.
And if you step out and it doesn't keep running the same, then it's not really something that's sellable or not something that someone would want as an asset. So I'd love in the next like 2-3 years to get my business to that stage. But at the same time, to cover that person to do that, I don't want to go hire another three or four tradesmen. Like looking at the numbers now, I think I'm at that sweet spot of like the profit and being able to run it myself.
Yeah.
And I think to get to the next stage to make the same money, I'd have to have like another 4 or 5 guys.
Yeah.
Like I can't afford to have someone paying myself a wage and someone in the office with only hiring 1 or 2.
That's a
big jump and a big risk, especially work dies off and all of a sudden you got 20-30 grand of wages a week. It's something that I stress enough with what I've got.
The pills get bigger.
It's just hard when you think about where I want to go with business. It's something that I'd have to redo my business plan because originally my whole goal was like get off the tools and be in the office and just do the bookwork. And now I'm doing that. I'm like, fuck, I way prefer when I'm out on the tools.
Yeah.
But I just can't run a business and be working at the same time
on site.
So it's all these little things you don't think of when you want to start a business. You're like, oh, I'd be sick to not come to work in jeans and fuck sit in the office and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
But when you start doing that, you're like, oh, actually it's pretty cool to be out on site and just work and not have to stress about all this other shit.
The challenges become difficult. Become different, sorry.
Yeah. And it's easy as a trade, you'd be like, oh, fucking office people don't know what work's like, blah, blah, blah. And then when you start doing it, you're like, fuck, how do people sit and stare at a screen for 8 hours, like get headaches, you fuck get a sore back. I'm like, this is bullshit.
I'm not saying shit because my boy's going to be like, shut the fuck up. Yeah, I'm not saying nothing,
But no, I know your work's probably a bit more physical than being a Sparky, but... I miss going out on the tools and stuff as well. So
I think the biggest thing is just the banter.
Yeah.
Like you finish a hard day, you look back, you know what you've done,
And some days go quick. You're out on site, you're having a chat with the guys.
10 hours ago.
There's other tradies there.
It's full on. Like that's better, but you learn to love different aspects,
Yeah.
I said to Kelly the other day, now when I dress up a really nice email when I'm getting back, that gives me my little hit of dopamine. So it's just different as time has evolved. But it's a mad journey. So all right, I'm gonna wrap this one up. So it has been a very good one. I feel like we need to definitely run this one back eventually. I feel like we definitely will. 6 months, we'll do it again. And but Aiden, I want to thank you again, mate, for coming on. You did very well. First podcast. Thanks, man. You smashed it. So thank you again. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you guys on the next one.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.